No, I make fun of all people, Catholics, Irish, Jews. Well, Jews, I don't like to make too much fun. No, we're perfect people, we really are. Found a few bum breaks with the Red Sea trick, but hey, you can't win them all. That's what I do, I laugh about people. Look at this elderly couple, smiling and laughing, knowing, tops, you got another month. Tops. Are you Jews? How'd you get those seats? What's your last name, Dad? What's your last name? No, I'm talking to your man. Is he deaf? What's your last name, Dad? Witzel. Witzel? No, with an M. Oh, with an M, Witzel. Yeah. Good to see you. Remember the old days, Witzel? No wonder he didn't want to tell me his name. I remember you. You were a god at Camp Schneemann. Good to see you, Mitzel. I'm only kidding. I don't care what you are. German, Irish, Jew, Italian. I do care. I'll be honest. I do. No, I don't care what you are. You're a nice couple. You're retired, right, Dad? No. You're not retired? You're an old man. Sit down. It's over, for Christ's sake.
Cheers, Bears fans. This is Bears Barroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and that was the great Don Rickles just 2 years ago at the age of 88 performing one of his classic comedy routines. Today, on Thursday, April 6th, we learned Rickles passed away, and it makes me sad to have lost one of my comedy heroes. I will close the show with a couple of thoughts about Mr. Rickles. And just prior to that, we will have on Phil Latoshin, who was my guest earlier in the week, and we ran out of time and weren't able to address a few of the questions that were directed at us via Twitter, so we will deliver as promised. But my first guest is Ian Wharton, a writer for Bleacher Report and the man behind the aptly titled Ian Wharton's 2017 Draft Guide, which you can purchase for $7 at draftcentric.weebly.com. Weebly is spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y. Or just go over to Ian's Twitter page where you can find the info at the top of his feed. Ian's Twitter handle is at NFL Film Study. Let me tell you, if you love this time of the year, having a draft guide like Ian's is definitely worth the $7. He's put a ton of work into it. His analysis is always interesting, well-informed, and entertaining. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Hey, thanks, man. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk football.
Ian, I've been looking over your draft guide now for probably the last 4 hours, and I'm really having fun with it. I love the layout. I love a lot of the fun things that you've got. I actually don't want to give away too much to the audience because you've got so many cool little features there that it's always a surprise to learn what a draft analyst sees in a particular player. So we'll probably do a lot more teasing than actually giving away some of the material on your draft guide. But one of the things I do want to give away is you do a mock draft in your guide, and I think it's two rounds, correct?
Yes, sir.
And I'm not going to mention who the first round draft pick is, but I will mention who the second round draft pick is, and that's Mike Williams, the wide receiver from Clemson. Tell me why you think he's going to fall to the second round and why you think he would be a good match for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, so, you know, this is more of a mock based off what I would do off of my evaluation. So I don't think that will happen when it comes to late April. I think he's going to be a guy who's probably going to be a top 15, maybe top 10 pick. Personally, I like Mike Williams. I just don't love Mike Williams. I think he's going to be a guy who wins in a very specific way. And to me, that's not worth a first round pick. Especially at wide receiver, where we found a lot of mid-round picks the last couple of years, really the last decade or so, come in and make a big impact. And the first-round receivers, unless if they're an absolute physical freak, they aren't really making that huge impact, at least on a consistent basis, to be worthy of that, especially in a class that's so deep at other positions, especially at defense. So, you know, Williams, I don't think he's a realistic target for the Bears, honestly, but he would be a terrific fit. And I think that the Bears, even though they've got a fairly good receiving core on paper, I like Kevin White. Obviously, he's got to prove himself healthy. Marcus Wheaton was an intriguing signing. I like Cameron Meredith actually a lot. Like that's one of the guys that I'm really excited to see the steps that he takes here in 2017. And then Kendall Wright, I thought was a nice buy low opportunity. But you know, adding a guy like Mike Williams, especially with Mike Glennon, if they add a rookie quarterback, you want to be able to find as many young, talented guys who have an elite trait or an elite skill set. And Williams does have that one elite trait, which is that ability to go up and win in jump ball situations. So I think he's a good player. I'm not sure he's going to be maybe a top tier talent, but I think he is kind of a similar player to, in that same vein at least, of Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah, if he fell to the second round, I would be jumping up and down here in Chicago and opening up a fine bottle of wine. Ian, one of the things I wanted to touch on with you is to talk about some of the developmental quarterbacks that you've identified in your guide. And in particular, I've picked three of them because I know that they have visited with the Chicago Bears, whether it was a private workout or at the combine or at one of the bowl games. And so I'd like to start first with Nathan Peterman, who the Chicago Bears coached at the Senior Bowl. Give me your analysis of Peterman, who might be the quarterback the Bears will choose, given that it's beginning to look more and more likely that a first-round quarterback might be out of the picture for the Bears.
Yeah, so Peterman, to me, is the quintessential backup in the NFL. And I know that he's gotten a lot of hype this offseason by bigger-name draft folks, and you know I respect that. But to me, the comparison I went with is like a Colt McCoy type of quarterback. Maybe someone that can start a few games, maybe even start half a season, and he can do things well. He's a guy who executes very simple offensive schemes and can get the ball to playmakers and kind of let the offense steer itself without being really harmful and hurting it too much, especially with turnovers. But I do think he's a limited upside type player. He's got a very average to below average arm as far as NFL standards, and I think that that's going to hold him back. I don't think he's an overly accurate quarterback downfield, so you're looking at intermediate and deep throws. It's going to be an area that's really going to be limited in any type of offense, and I don't really think that that's a sustainable Super Bowl caliber skill set that I just described. So for me, I like him as a mid-round pick, whereas I think that the NFL values him probably closer to day two. For me, that's a little bit rich. I'm personally, my own bias is against average type quarterbacks. I'd rather get better than that, or guys that have the potential to be better than that. And so Peterman for me is not someone I'd probably take at his current price, but I do see the value in having him on a team. The value is going to be that he's a high-end backup that you're going to trust in you know, maybe like a 4 to 6 game spurt if you really need him to play.
Well, we'll see about Peterman. The Bears coached him down at the Senior Bowl, so they got a great look at him, and we'll see if he's in their draft plans. Now, let's talk about Brad Kaya, the 6'4", 215-pound quarterback from Miami. There appears to be some interest on him in some circles. What do you think about Brad Kaya?
Yeah, I think he's in a little bit of a similar boat. I think physically he's not a guy that really has a tremendous amount of upside, but I like his skill set more in the fact that I think he can play right away. And I think he has a very specific strength in a West Coast scheme. He gets the ball out quickly. When Miami would call anywhere from like those 2 to 10 yard routes, he was decisive. He was accurate, very quick trigger, and he's someone that plays with confidence. Now, when you get further down the field, kind of like Peterman, despite Kaya actually having a stronger arm and a little bit better accuracy to deeper levels, it's going to be more of a 50-50 whether it's going to be accurate, whether it's the right read, whether the ball actually gets there on time. And that, to me, is a concern. I think that he's a guy that needs to add strength throughout his midsection and his legs. Only 214 pounds at a 6'4 frame. He probably needs to add another 10 pounds of actual bulk so that his core and his midsection can drive the ball to the far outside hash. If he can do that in the next couple years of his of his young career, then maybe you can see that those projections and maybe that evaluation is going to change and become more of a strength for his. He is still a young player. He's only 21 years old, 22, going to be 22 this season. And so that's a positive, and that's something that you kind of expect with a young person, not even just football player in general. Your body's going to grow. And so, again, I like Kaya in that third or fourth round range. I compared him to like an Aaron Murray. But I do like his projection a little bit more than Nathan Peterman. And I think if you can get him in like the third round, I really wouldn't complain at that point, because I think he, again, is going to be a high-end backup at worst. And maybe you can get yourself like an average-type starter in the right situation. And that's not a great goal, especially when you have Mike Glennon already in place. But at least there are clear strengths with him, and you can build somewhat of a good offense around him with the right playmakers.
Yeah, I see Brad as being a victim of that horrible offensive line that he had to play under last year. You saw a noticeable drop from 2015 to 2016, didn't you?
I did, but I think he exacerbated some of those issues himself with his play style. He likes to hold on to the ball, and he's not really a guy that anticipates tremendously well. He's very slow-footed in the pocket. And there are times where he definitely made the issues worse. But I do agree, though, his offensive line was poor. I'm not sure that it was especially poor on the collegiate level, just because we saw Jared Goff last year deal with a worse offensive line at Cal. Even some guys, other guys this year, it's like Patrick Mahomes had a worse offensive line. So it is an excuse to some level, but I don't think that he was simply the victim, whereas I think he somewhat made it worse.
Okay, another quarterback who visited with the Bears is Antonio Pipkin from Tiffin College. My first question is, where is Tiffin College?
It is a small school in Ohio. I went to Ashland University, and Tiffin is in the same conference as Tiffin, and it's basically middle of nowhere, Ohio.
Now tell me about Pipkin. What do you like about him, and what are some of his weaknesses?
I really like his athleticism. I like his size. He is the definition of a practice squad long-term development, and maybe even a possible positional change guy. He's a very good athlete, and that stands out immediately when you watch him. He wants to be a pocket passer, so if you want to develop him at quarterback, he's got the mindset to be the quarterback. And I think he'd be a guy that if you put him on the practice squad and you don't really see a whole bunch of growth as a passer, because he has to. Accuracy wise, he's not an NFL level. Consistently being able to quickly read a defense and be able to make those decisions, really even before he sees a guy come open, that anticipation, that timing factor, he has to get better and just quicker with his process, especially coming from such a low division. And that's normal. It's a huge jump, even from where he was at Tiffin to all the way up to like the Senior Bowl was like a moment where he just seemed like he got big eyes. And it's not really his fault. It's just, it's a huge jump in competition. I think his value is going to be eventually as a positional change guy. So maybe you move him to wide receiver or cornerback and you try to maximize his athleticism, because he can run pretty well and he can really make defenders miss one-on-one.
Now, all three of those quarterbacks you have on your draft guide as Tier 3 developmental talent quarterbacks. So is it safe to say you don't think that any one of these guys has starter qualities?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, these are guys that, you know, you want to take a flyer on at some point. I do believe that most teams should draft a quarterback, if not every year, then maybe every other year. And, you know, I think these are guys that are worthy to at least pick up in specific situations. And, you know, I don't really think Pipkin makes as much sense as a quarterback for the Bears. And I'm not really sure Peterman does either. But you could definitely sell me on a guy like Kaya, or even like Jerod Evans. And then I know they haven't hosted him as a visit. But with Mike Glennon in place, they kind of already have that average type of quarterback, that more of like a game manager, if you will, type of quarterback. So if they want to swing bigger than that, then that would make a lot of sense to look at a couple other mid-round options.
All right, you mentioned Evans. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on him.
Yeah, so he's probably my favorite developmental type in this class. He's got the big arm. He's just a well-built player, 6'3", 232. He bounced around a little bit in college. He went to actually went to the Air Force Academy, sat for a year, ended up transferring to a community college, or I'm sorry, a junior college, not community college, a junior college, played there for a year, was one of the top junior college transfers, went to Virginia Tech to play for Justin Fuente, who's a fantastic coach. And he's got a bunch of siblings, and so that's part of the reason that he actually declared early as a junior. So we only had 1 year of FBS experience, but he played really well for Virginia Tech. And I thought he did a good job of maximizing the talent around him, which there was quite a bit of talent at Virginia Tech. And so for him, it's just a matter of consistency. Consistency with his footwork, consistency with throwing accurate passes. And it's just going to be a matter of experience, and that's going to take time. But I think I definitely see starter-level traits in him, especially with arm strength and being able to create big plays. But now it's just the ability to raise that floor and the bad plays, getting rid of some of that stuff, getting up to at least a decent NFL level, because you can deal with some of the negative plays as long as he's creating big positive plays. But you know, he's a guy that I would like somewhere late day two, maybe early day three.
One of the scouts on one of the services said that he really could have used another year. Came out too early. You agree with that?
You know, as far as on-field play, yes. As far as off-field play, or at least off-field considerations, that's really tough for us to judge. You know, if he has to provide for his family, that's obviously, you know, something that's difficult for us to gauge. As far as on the field, absolutely. Although I know he had issue with how often Fuente was running him and using him as a runner. He does have a torn ACL in his past as well. So that probably all plays into it. But as far as a passer, absolutely. It's hard to simulate those reps, and he's not going to get those reps probably in his first 2 years in the NFL.
All right, let's turn our attention to four players who we know have, and this is according to WalterFootball.com. They do a nice job of tracking player visits. And so if you want to know who all of the players are that have visited with the Bears, either in a private workout or at the combine or at one of the bowl games, then just go over to WalterFootball.com. You should find it there. One of the players that you've talked about extensively in your guide that has visited with the Bears is wide receiver Carlos Henderson. Tell us what your thoughts are about the receiver from Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite players in the class, especially at the wide receiver position, just because he's such a fun, explosive player. We've seen a lot more of these receivers around the 5'11", 6-foot mark, 200 pounds. It's hard for those guys to stand out compared to their NFL counterparts, just because there's so many of them that kind of run around like a 4-5 speed, and they're just not quite explosive enough to make it in the NFL or be like a consistent starter. But Henderson's one of those guys that he's got pretty much everything physically that you want in a wide receiver to win, and he wins early in his routes. He's very good off the line of scrimmage, very quick, very smooth runner, not amazing high-end speed. Like, he's not like the John Ross with like a 4.2 speed, but he's definitely got enough downfield separation to where he's going to make plays downfield, almost like a Sterling Shepard was last year from Oklahoma. Ended up having a nice rookie season with the New York Giants. And so Henderson, I think if you can get him on day two, he's a big play guy. He's not really really a traditional guy in terms of, like, he's not like a number one. I don't think he's like an Odell Beckham guy, but he's a guy that, you know, as long as you have some time to improve his route running, you can move him inside, you can move him outside. He can be a little bit of a dynamic threat to an offense. So I think he's one guy that really stood out amongst a big crowd of similar type of receivers.
You have, as one of his weaknesses, his route development, which is interesting because the Bears have a couple of guys on the roster, including Kevin White, who are not really very, very good with their route tree yet. Tell me a little bit about that weakness with Henderson and any other weaknesses that you think are important to note.
It's one of those things that a lot of these guys, we're going to mention that just because collegiate offenses are so reliant on the spacing that the size of the hash mark difference allows them to have, and the difference in athleticism between the NFL and college football. And so it's a little bit normal. It's not one of those things that I weigh too heavily, but it is a factor. And you know, it's one of those things where he's got the traits to become a very good route runner. And to me, that's what's more important, is that if he is put into a situation where they accentuate that as something that needs to happen early in his career, then really physically speaking, there's no reason why he can't get better in that area. And to me, that's what's most important. But there are definitely some concerns, I think, as far as he's not an elite athlete. He's not a guy that dominated against press corners with great length. And so that's something that's going to be new getting to the NFL, especially coming from a non-Power 5 school. That tends to be a difficult jump for a lot of guys. So, you know, he's a little bit of a riskier pick, maybe than like a John Ross type, and that's why he's more of a second day type of pick instead of round one type of pick. But that's the inherent risk that you're going to have with a lot of these guys, is that they're not a for sure star, whereas he may just be a solid number two or like a very good slot receiver.
Okay, Elijah McGuire, the running back from Louisiana Lafayette, is another player who's visited with the Bears. Tell us your scouting report on McGuire.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite players actually in the draft as well, specifically because I remember watching him as a sophomore. He was playing with a couple of better teammates in the backfield. The quarterback situation got worse for him over the last 2 years. He lost his running mate at the time, and so he ended up adding a little bit of bulk to his frame, especially in 2015, and it really zapped him of some of that explosiveness that we saw as a sophomore. Senior year comes back a little bit more trimmed down, and there you saw a little bit more of that high-end quickness, that burst to be able to create some yardage when there's not necessarily a clear lane. And, McGuire's a terrific receiving threat as well. He's not going to be a guy that really is a pass blocker or gets a bunch of big plays, but he's going to be a consistent player, a guy who you can throw in there and have him catch the ball, move the chains, handle maybe 8 to 12 carries a game and be very efficient with those carries, even if they're not explosive. So for me, he's a guy that will be a solid backup in the NFL. I have him as an early day three pick, and the reality is that in such a class like this, he may end up going late day three, but I would love him anywhere on day three. I think he's a high character player, a lot of production. We've seen the explosiveness out of him, and if you can get him back to that level, then you'd really be looking at a steal.
Intriguing. The next player on my list here is also intriguing. You've got him ranked as the 7th safety on your board, and you also, in your draft guide, you've got these really cool features where you list categories, and you have him under the category for safety skills as the most untapped upside, and that is Josh Jones. Tell us about him.
Yeah, so Jones, you know, he's gotten some buzz here recently, maybe a little too rich for my blood. I've heard, you know, late first round, I think that's a little too rich for me in such a good safety class, but he is very intriguing. He is extremely fast. He's a guy that really flashes man cover skills. That's going to be an area where he's going to continue to develop, I think. The athleticism is there, but you just want to continue to see him get exposure to it. NC State didn't really give him full exposure to any one specific role in 2016, and that's something that, you know, it just makes it a little bit tougher as far as his projection. And it makes it a little bit tougher for defensive coordinators because they're not going to be able to just plug him into a specific role and see him star right away. But the athleticism is there. He has to clean up his angles when he comes down from the safety position. He gets a little over aggressive, gets a little bit too antsy as far as attacking the ball carrier. He needs to be a little more disciplined and be a little bit safer and kind of maximize that safety term and the moniker of the position. But he is experienced as a two high safety. He's got the athleticism to occasionally rotate as a single high player. I just want to see him get a little bit more consistent as far as his angles. But the effort is there, which is great. When he actually is in line to make the tackle, he's a great tackler. He's a very good finisher. And again, I love the speed. There's not a lot of safeties with a ton of speed, and he's got that speed. So, you know, I do think he, as a developmental starter, a a guy on day two, you know, if you give him a time, especially in that third round range in such a deep safety class, he could really pay off well. I don't know if he'll be on the board that late, and maybe you have to take him round two. But, you know, if you have some patience with him, and if he's open to changing his game a little bit, he could really be a stud.
Now, Chris Wormley is a player. You've got 151 on your board overall. Tell us about Wormley, because he's also visited with the Bears.
Yeah, Wormley, you know, he's the type of player that you'd love to have on your team, in the sense that he sacrificed for Michigan when they needed him the most. And especially as a senior, it's got to be difficult when, you know, Jim Harbaugh, of course, when Jim Harbaugh comes to you, you know, it's an easy decision to do. But, you know, he ended up moving to defensive end as a senior as 300 pounds. And it simply didn't work for him. He's not a pass rusher at that position. He is an interior defensive player, or in the Bears' case, if they're going to be running three-man fronts, he's going to be that defensive end position and more of a rotational player, and be able to come in on passing downs and kind of use that athleticism that he has against guards and tackles and attack the inside shoulder a little bit more than what he could on the edge. And I think that hurt him, and that definitely hurt him in my evaluation of him. But he is a guy that I would definitely like on my team, just because he's an effort player. He plays his butt off throughout the whistle. He finishes throughout the whistle. He's very smart, especially in run control. He recognizes plays quickly, and he's pretty good as far as finishing. To me, it's just about his lack of ability to disengage, and I think that's going to be something he's going to have to work on, is his hand usage, being able to break off of tacklers and then pursue. But that's something that is definitely workable. That's not something that I don't think is impossible to improve. So he's a little bit of a project player, but he's definitely a guy that I think could make an impact in a very limited role early on. And you could see him grow into a useful rotational player throughout his career.
Ian, well, we know that O.J. Howard and Evan Engram, two of the top tight ends in this draft, have visited with the Bears. I wanted to ask you to kind of compare and contrast those two guys. I think it's highly unlikely either one is going to be chosen by the Bears, unless maybe the Bears trade up in the first round or trade down in the first round. Who knows? But let's talk a little bit about those two players and what you think about them.
Yeah, so it's tough to kind of compare them, in the sense that I think that Howard especially is more of a generational type of prospect. And so when you consider that, you say, well, Howard, I don't know if there's really been as strong of a tight end prospect since over a decade ago, when Kellen Winslow Jr. was drafted by the Cleveland Browns. And there's been some good tight end prospects for sure. But Howard is just a rare breed. He's an incredible athlete, best athlete in the draft. He's an amazing blocker. He's going to enter the NFL as one of the best blockers. He's a solid receiver. You know, he's not the best after the catch. He's really going to do most of his damage before the catch, but he's got the devastating speed. I think he's going to be an instant hit in the NFL and be a Pro Bowler for a long time. And in a similar vein, I still think that Evan Engram is a phenomenal playmaker in his own right. He's a little bit more of like the slot receiver, although he can line up in line. I don't think his blocking is something that is a negative. I think his experience in blocking is a negative, just because they didn't ask him to do it much. But when he did block, he looked pretty competent. And I think that you could build that if you want him to be more of a traditional tight end. But I'm just not going to use him in that sense, to be honest. I'm going to use him as a slot receiver, a guy that is going to stretch the field vertically down the seams. That's really what he did the best at Ole Miss. And again, he's a guy with very little transition time, a guy that you can expect year one to come right in and instantly claim that type of role and be a safety valve for his quarterback. It's just the overall upside is not quite there as it is with Howard, because he's not quite as explosive as Howard is. As an athlete, he's not as freaky of an athlete, but I don't think that's going to stop him from being a solid and above average receiving threat at the position.
Ian, I hold guys like you in such high esteem because you put the work in, you watch tons and tons of tape in order to provide such well-informed opinions on these players. I got to ask you, what's the most fun part about putting together this draft guide, which, again, I highly recommend for our listeners to purchase for $7. It is so well put together, so many cool features. What for you though, Ian, is what you find most fun about doing this?
I think the fun part is just kind of comparing the conclusions to what others find. I try to not digest too much draft material throughout the season, because I really don't want my opinion swayed negatively or too positively on folks. And I do watch them throughout the year, but kind of towards the end of the draft process, I start looking at other folks' opinions. And I think it's just really fun and just interacting with people, whether we agree or disagree. I think it's a healthy routine to do, just because of the way that you can change your views or maybe be swayed to say, hey, you know, like, watch this game of certain player. Maybe you know, those weaknesses aren't going to be as much as a concern for you. So I think just like the interaction based on what we found and how we interpreted what we saw on the tape. You know, we can all watch the same game and come away with 20 different reactions. And to me, that's really fun, is just discussing that.
Ian, tell our listeners where they can buy the draft guide and where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, so you can buy the draft guide at draftcentric.weebly.com. It's right there on the homepage. There's a 10-page free sampler people can check out if they want to see the design of the draft guide and maybe decide if it's right for them. And then there's also a buy now link. If you hit buy now, it sends you to PayPal. You can check out right there, and it will be digitally delivered to you right after checkout via email. And you can follow me or interact with me and tell me why I'm right or why I'm wrong at NFL Film Study on Twitter.
I did it. I paid the $7, and I'm glad that I did. It's a really fun read. It's very well put together, and I encourage all of you to take a look at it. And it's something that I'm going to be using well after the draft to get to know these players a little bit better. Ian, thanks very much for being on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and if you ever have time to have me back on, I'd be happy to join.
Sounds good. We'll talk after the draft.
I'll always remember the first time I met Don. I went over and said, "Mr. Rickles, I'm such a huge fan," and he said, "Sweetheart, just the check."
But the great thing about Don is that his jokes appeal to everyone. Polacks, Chinamen, the coloreds, broads. What, no? We're not allowed to say that anymore? Why is he still saying that?
Yeah, he should probably stop saying it.
That was Amy Poehler and Tina Fey roasting Don Rickles on his birthday celebration a few years ago. And we'll talk a little bit more about Mr. Rickles. But first, I have Draft Dr. Phil with me, who he and I had a great discussion about our mock drafts on our last show. And we went way over on our time and didn't get to answer a few questions that came in via Twitter. But we're going to do so today, as promised. The first question is from Chris Armstrong, our good friend Chris, who is always interacting with us on Twitter. It's at ChrisArmstrong1, and that's Chris with a K. He asked the question, do you see any steals in rounds 4 through 6 under the radar guys? And of course, it's rounds 4 and 5 because the Bears have 3 picks in rounds 4 and 5 and do not have a pick in round 6. So, Phil, what do you think? Any under the radar guys that you like?
If I look at the middle of the rounds, I'll talk about DeMonte Casey from San Diego State, who I really love as a corner. He reminds me of Asante Samuel. We talked about him on the cornerbacks podcast with Jose Cotto and me and Lauren. I just love this football player. This football player's ability to take away the football. He had 17 interceptions in his career. I mean, to do that, I don't care what conference you're in, you have a nose for the football and getting after it. I saw a great interview with Teron Davenport of footballgameplan.com. And they do a good job over there with Casey. And he was talking about how the coach was really helping him focus on turning to find the football as a sophomore or whatever. It was a good interview with Teron, and he really expressed how that helped his game and thus created all these turnovers for the kid. Another guy I really love, his big tight end out of Iowa, who ran a hell of a lot better than even I was expecting him to do. I really admire the kid for his athleticism and technique and blocking, and that's Kittle out of Iowa. I know he's starting to get a little hot swell with his name, Aldo, and the Bears have a need for that tight end that's going to stick and destroy and help the run game out, but have the kind of athleticism. If you're looking to keep continuing to improve, I think if you get edge players that are able to help your tackles where you don't have as much, you know, talent there, Kittle is a guy that I absolutely love. Then I love a guy, you know, slots are my thing. I love Daniel Braverman. I think he's really going to shut up a lot of critics coming off an injury that he's been playing with all throughout last year, he told me, and really ultimately got it, had to have surgery in the offseason to take care of it. His update to him, Aldo, breaking news, is he's doing really well. He should be running. He probably won't participate in, you know, in the OTAs, but he's going to be ready. So, but when you talk about the slot, Ryan Switzer of North Carolina is a guy that just has a feel for the route tree and a feel for the position. If you understand what it takes to get open, he looks like a polished guy coming out of college who understands the business of getting open by running great routes and having great hands. That kid is somebody that I totally would love for the Bears to get, to have slots that are going to do it, because I'm not a big fan of Wheaton in the slot. I think he's an outside, just nine route guy. I don't think he is going to give you slot game. So how they see that position will be important. One other guy, probably going to go higher than the fourth round. So I'll try that. How about Alex Anzalone of Florida in the fourth? He can go in and around there. The Bears, you know, you got Nick Kwiatkowski, Aldo. You got Jarrell Freeman, who's older. Great friggin' football player. You got Danny Trevathan returned from injury. I don't think the Bears are just, let's kick back and relax our feet and go with what we got there. Yeah, Christian Jones, John Timu, you could slide in there. But really, ultimately, the goal is to get better. And I love this kid, Anzalone, out of Florida. I think he could play inside and outside. But his nose for the football and how he reacts to it, I think could be a tremendous middle-round guy that ends up being something really special. And I can't miss on Chad Kelly. I know the Bears didn't go to his pro day. I think that's – the more I talk about Ryan Pace, the more I'm starting to just distrust the man. And I know that could be a different show, but you got to be – search over under every rock. You can't be just writing things off in regards to this football and this football team and this franchise out, though.
Right.
It's just discouraging to see – the Chicago Bears and how they're being built right now. If Mike Glennon is the answer, I'm trying to figure out the question right now, because that's where we're going. So I don't think you win like that. So you got to get middle round talent. Chad Kelly, to me, I know he was injured at his pro day with his wrist. He has a questionable background, but you know, these are young kids. He who is free of sin cast the first stone, you know. Let's all look and talk about who we were when we were in college and what we did. You know, I played at a Division I AA school. Imagine being at a 1A program and you're the man. Sometimes that gets to your head and you do stupid things. Yes, you know, that's just the way this position of football is, and will be critical, but I think you're doing a disservice if all 31 other football teams were there and the Bears weren't. That to me was a little disheartening. I got to say that. Not that they can't be looking at the tape, Aldo, and
sure,
and they know, you know, but ultimately the kid hasn't thrown. He wasn't able to go to the combine with the new NFL rule. They kind of offered him to come, and then when this rule came about, because they couldn't be allowing Joe Mixon to come, but Chad Kelly to come, so they kind of, oh, Chad, you're not coming. So anyway, that disappointed me not to see them there at this kid's pro day.
Yeah, and I think the Bears still have some opportunity for some private workouts. I think you're allocated a certain amount. I don't think they've reached that level yet. So there's still a chance that they might bring Chad Kelly in for a private workout. We shall see. But I understand your disappointment in that, particularly with a guy like Kelly, who, as you said, has some, you know, off the field problems. But by all accounts, he's been remorseful. He's definitely got the genes, good parents, and so forth. So hopefully, he's turned things around and will have a good NFL career. And who knows, maybe even with Chicago. The one other question before I let you go, Phil, is from Raph Tucker. R-A-P-H is how you spell his first name, so I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Raph Tucker. He's at ZZNUPE6, and he asked a really good question. Who do you think is the best defensive draft prospect for the Bears scheme? Jonathan Allen or Solomon Thomas, and why? I think that's a good question, Phil, and it's all yours.
You know what? That's like shepherd's pie, you know. Some people put corn in it. Some people put green peas in it. You know, to me, I think Solomon Thomas is an elite talent. Raph, so therefore, I would just go with what player can give me the most. I don't think you're losing if you're taking either one of those players. I've got them both graded very high. I got Jonathan Allen as my number one defensive lineman interior-wise. Mm-hmm. And I have him being able to be flexible enough to play the five technique. He can't be an edge rusher in the 3-4. I have Solomon Thomas able to be interior three technique, can give you snaps at five technique in a pinch, but really ultimately put him outside, let him rush the passer and do what he's going to do. So for me, when I'm assessing, I think both of these guys fit because they're excellent at what they do. But if I had to choose between the two, I think you're leaning Solomon Thomas. If Solomon Thomas goes off the board and the Bears select Jonathan Allen, I'm not going to be upset with that pick because I realize the type of football player Jonathan Allen is. 12 sacks from the inside, physical football player, heavy hands, just will get after you. I don't get to talk about the guy enough. I really am high on the football player. I know everyone associates me with Solomon Thomas, so it's a great question, but I got to go with the higher graded player because I think they both fit the scheme. So that would determine my selection.
I did pose the question to Jose Cotto, our senior analyst at BearsBarroom.com, and he said that they're both a good fit, but he said that Thomas is an outside linebacker in base, and that isn't a good value at number three, at the third pick of the draft. And he also said that Allen will be a solid pro, but I doubt that he's going to be an all-pro. And then he went on to send me a direct message saying that he thinks Solomon Thomas, because he will have to play outside linebacker in base and inside in subs, that he won't dominate with just his quickness in the NFL. Jose thinks that he will be moved off the ball a lot initially as he adjusts to the NFL game and that he will be targeted in subs. He will be run at. But again, he feels that both are a fit. We had one more question from Mike the Rookie. And it was, is there a trade down partner that would be most attractive to the Bears? And Mike, look for an article that I'm writing that should be up on Monday at bearsbarroom.com that addresses this subject. Fly the W on Twitter asked the same question and made some really good suggestions. And Shane Marsall has made some suggestions. So I'm going to incorporate a lot of the thinking there into this article. It'll be up on Monday at bearsbarroom.com. Fellow Toshin, who do you got on Sunday on Bears Hour Live?
Listen, we're bringing in the wily veteran. I know he's fiery on Twitter. He also has a Pro Football Weekly draft magazine. Mm-hmm. And former Bears director of player personnel, or college director, Greg Gabriel will be joining us to talk Bears draft. We're kind of going to pick his brain on what goes into the process of analyzing the quarterback position. He had the opportunity to do that back in 2003 with when Leftwich and Grossman and that class was coming in. Just go through the process, take us through what they're going to do and what the top of this draft, the value of the quarterback versus the value of the defensive prospects that seem to be in this draft. Throw in a O.J. Howard and really pick his brain. It should be a great show. You know, Lauren and I are excited about Greg Gabriel coming on. I think Bears fans should be as well.
I've been buying the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide, boy, I want to say since the mid-'80s when a guy named Joel Buschbaum was the
Joel Buschbaum.
Do you know the name?
Takes a $20 cab ride to get around that guy. That was my favorite line. I used to get the Joel Buschbaum draft green guide. Book.
There you go.
I used to do that too, Aldo, and I'm a big fan of Pro Football Weekly. I used to go to the Barnes & Noble to get a Chicago Tribune on a Sunday and the Pro Football Weekly magazine, they called it, but it was really like a newspaper copy.
Right, right. Excellent. Well, tell Greg he's got a lot of fans, and Pro Football Weekly is a staple at the Gandia home. Have a great show with him on Sunday. We'll tune in, and we'll make sure all of our listeners know about it. We'll retweet all the information so people could tune in to Bears Hour Live, where Lauren and Phil will have Greg Gabriel of Pro Football Weekly, the former Bears player personnel director. Thanks very much, Phil.
Hey, Aldo, always a pleasure. I appreciate your support, and I love doing the show with you.
Thank you.
Cheers, brother. Bears friends.
Thank you, brother.
It's great, though. I make fun of the president. Why not? I make fun of everybody in the world. That's America. Laughing, Charlton Heston. I'm a friend. It's over. I'll tell you this. If you were Moses, I was a Mau Mau fighter pilot. Elizabeth Taylor was backstage in a Cleopatra outfit killing snakes. I'll tell you this. And Tom Selleck was under the shower going, look at this, the water runs up. I'll tell you this. Is this too fast, Ronnie? Anyway, he's sitting there looking at the program going, where does he say he makes fun of me? Where does it say that? It's only a joke, Mrs. Reagan.
That's Don Rickles roasting then-President Ronald Reagan at his inauguration gala back in 1984, I think it was, and he was also going after celebrities who attended the gala as well. Rickles once said, some people say funny things, but I say things funny. That's why no one ever socked him, sued him, or soured on him. He had a gift of making it obvious that his jokes about your looks, your ethnicity, your lot in life was about laughing, about that tonic that makes us all forget, for a little while anyway, the problems in our life. Don Rickles made fun of other people, but he also taught us to laugh at ourselves. And in today's hypersensitized, politically correct climate, it's important to remember that. Trust me, I'm a believer in being politically correct because I define it as simply being nice to one another. But being nice to one another should not always supersede our innate drive to laugh at things that make us laugh. As long as the jokes are not meant to chop us down, we need to try to take it on the chin, and when they sting a little, just turn the other cheek. All right, everyone. I'll leave you with a song Don Rickles sang at one of his final comedy concerts. Now, he wasn't a singer, of course, but what he left us with were some lyrics that helped explain the man and maybe tell us a little bit about ourselves. Remember, drink responsibly and bear down.
I'll trade you laughter for love. I'll trade you one for the other. Laughter for love. What can you lose? Some madness from earth. And for whatever it's worth, whether you like it or not, I'll give you all.
not, I'll trade you sunlight for gold. One shines as bright as the other. Love is pure gold, and laughter the sun. Life, this is my life, for all of my life. And you are part of this life I live. I swear that it's true, I love to do what I do, to share this laughter I give, for just a little love from